you will increase your efficiency 20% if you learn to do the tough things first, the ones you don't want to do.
Ray Zinn now imparts his management philosophy in Tough Things First. In this series, Zinn covers it all, from the essence of human happiness,
adding value, showing that you have value,
to the downside of venture capital.
You will not own the company.
And the essence of entrepreneurial discipline.
If you're going to make it a consistent practice of working Saturdays just because you think you've got to work 80 hours a week to be successful, you're just flat out wrong.
Now here's Ray Zinn, Silicon Valley's longest serving CEO and today's guest host.
Hi, you're listening to the Tough Things First podcast. I'm Eric Huberman, your guest host today, founder and CEO of Hawk Media, and I'm joined by Ray Zinn. How are you, Ray?
I'm doing great, and thanks for hosting this podcast for us today, Eric.
No, yeah, it's truly an honor to talk to you. So I'm going to start with a pretty straightforward question. You obviously talk a lot about Tough Things First, and I would love to, first off, talk a little bit about your background. Would love you to get people up to speed on the impressive man that you are. And really go into, you know, the tough things you had to deal with and what you focused on first and what brought you to this philosophy.
Okay. Well, first off, I'm 80 years old, 80 years young, as Eric says. That I'm 50 years older than Eric. Eric is just 30. And so I started my Krell, 37 years ago, actually 40 years ago now. And Eric, of course, started his company just a few years ago. So we're in totally different time points in starting our companies. But I started my Krell in 1978 with my own money because I wanted to own the company. I didn't want to have anyone tell me how to run the company. And so probably one of the toughest things I had to do was being able to run the company profitably because we were bank funded. And you can't run a company with bank funding unless you're profitable. And so that was the big challenge, was having a startup that we didn't lose money. And that's a challenge, I think, for anybody who thinks about it, you know, start a company from scratch and then not lose money. Because in the first year of operation, I could only have one quarter, 3 months, that I had a loss. And in that one quarter, it could not be such a significant loss that it caused me to go negative for the whole year. So in other words, I had to be maybe lose money in one quarter, but be positive for the entire year. So how do you grow your business when you're a startup, no customers basically, and then on top of that, you can't lose money because you have to pay people every week, you know, or every 2 weeks they want to get paid. So I had to change the strategy of my business that I originally had not had to do or not perceived to do, and that is to run it as a profitable business. So I operate as a service, much like you did, Eric. Your startup is very similar to mine. I offered a service. And it was a semiconductor service as opposed to marketing service like you're doing, but still, it was a service business so I could have that cash flow. And it wasn't until 1985 that I had sufficient revenues coming in that I could literally, start building my own products. And so we did in 85, we began looking at developing our own products as opposed to just offering services, you know, similar to what you're thinking about doing, I think. So, you know, even though it was, 40 years ago, business is business. You still want to run your company profitably. And that's the challenge that was. And so doing the tough things means that some of the things that you would like to have, like, fancy offices or lots of perks and stuff like that, we had, and a big salary for 2 years, I didn't even draw a salary. And so it was tough. And so learning to do the tough things was really what promulgated my Krell into being the company that it was when I sold it. So that's kind of in a nutshell, a little bit about me and how I started mine, Eric. And I think it's similar to what you did or what you're doing, and kind of what you're going to be facing. So 78 to 85. So let's say 7 years or 6.5 years, I operate as a service company.
Makes sense. My question to you is, because it actually is bizarre as it may seem like to people like you and I, it's unusual to run a business bootstrapped or for profitability these days. Like you would think that would be the point, but these days it's much, what's hyped in the news, what's talked about is fundraising, venture capital, raising as much money as you can, grabbing market share, beating other people out. You see companies like Uber who have never had unit economics, but their whole goal here is to make it so no one else can operate in the industry. Even Amazon, which has now been publicly traded for a long time, has only shown a profit one quarter and it was an accident because they really want to squeeze everyone out. So why do you think it's better to run, you know, a profitable business versus a company going that route, and why?
Well, again, if you want to be a unicorn, then you're going to operate like Uber or Amazon or Facebook and Google. They have a different strategy. I'm not knocking them, but that's not what I wanted. I was building a company for people. I wanted an enduring company that provided people a way to make a living. And so I wasn't looking at an in and out scenario. So I had to build my strategy for the company was to build an enduring business that could last on into the centuries. It didn't, but that was my goal when I started the company, was to provide an opportunity for people to actualize their an income for their family. And I wasn't worried about or my investors, or I was focused on building a company as opposed to just to building products. And so I wasn't trying to run anybody out of business. I wasn't trying to monopolize the market in my particular area of expertise. I just wanted to run a nice company and want to run it profitably. And so that's what I focused on. I didn't focus on running people out of business.
Yeah, and well, that's interesting. It's funny to me, and I've seen it now with a few companies. Your outcome, even though you never intended on selling the company, your outcome personally was actually much greater than most people's outcomes that end up selling unicorns. Like, because you personally own so much of the business that, even though the business itself didn't sell for the same amount maybe one of these unicorns will, your personal ownership in it was so great. You still had a better outcome that also seemed to be less risky, to be honest, because you always ran it profitably. So there was no burn rate. There was no begging people for money. It was like you ran a good business. So like it wasn't this risk of just completely falling apart all the time, which you have with the other strategy. And it's just always interesting to me that this almost more conservative strategy of building a good business actually can have a greater outcome than a lot of these, high-flying unicorns. I've been studying it a lot recently. And it's just interesting to see that it stays consistent. You talk about the age difference. We have I'm actually a 49 year age difference. I turned 31 a week ago. So getting up. and even in that difference in terms of like, it doesn't change. Business doesn't change. It's
no.
If you're in a profitable business, you're going to sustain. Things like economic shifts don't affect you as much. They still affect you and you might have to slim down a little bit, but you don't worry about not being able to raise capital, which is a big problem in these economic downshifts.
Exactly. So again, I want to reinforce or restate that I didn't start the company to make a lot of money. I wasn't saying, hey, I want to become this filthy rich guy. That wasn't why I did it. I wanted to have a company that was a real company that hired real people, that did real work. And I wasn't worried about, as I said, running people out of business. Wasn't planning on taking over the world. That wasn't the goal. If that's what other companies want to do, fine. But that's not what my intent was. I wanted to start a company, have it profitable, not having to go out looking for funding every 6 months. So I ran it profitably. I had positive cash flow and was successful in selling the company for a great deal of money. But that wasn't the goal. That wasn't why I did it. I did it because I wanted to build a company for people. I know that sounds a little bit, corny, but that was what I did. And when I started MyCrell in 78, the average age of the employees was 28. When I sold the company in 2015, the average age was 55. Not because I hired older people, it's because they were loyal, stayed with the company, and we didn't have layoffs. And so they just, naturally the population is just going to, after 37 years, is going to age. But these are very capable, very good people. And we were very successful, profitable every year, except for 1 year. We only had 1 year that I lost money. I lost $50,000 in 2003. And that's because I consolidated two fabs down to one. And as a consequence, I had to write $25 million or $29 million off. But I only lost $50,000 when you look at it on a GAAP basis. So I'm very proud of that, over 37 years of only losing $50,000. I never had to go back out raising money. Never from the day I launched the company, never had to do it. And one of the goals that I, and in fact, I mentioned this on in my blog and in my podcast that, if you're going to start a company, raise enough money to take you to profitability. Don't start the company unless you can get to profitability with what you've raised.
Yep, I totally agree. And again, unless you want to go down that other strategy, which has worked for a few people, but rarely works. But you just touched on something we were talking about earlier, which is, you know, the idea of age in the workplace. And, you know, this, it's actually very similar to us. Again, where there's a lot of parallels here. You know, our average employee age started at probably 26, 27, and maybe now is 28, you know, hasn't really aged up that much. You know, there's a propensity with startups in Silicon Valley and just the startup culture to really hire young people, which is, sounds like the same thing you did when you first started your business. But it can create, you know, a little bit of ageism where you're looking at young people for the sake of being young and as opposed to who's the most skilled at the job. What are your thoughts on what's going on in Silicon Valley with kind of the older demo that is still totally capable, if not more capable, has more knowledge and is finding a hard time getting work?
Well, that's a good, very good point, Eric. You know, we didn't intentionally hire young people. It's just that the population that was available to me to hire, they were young. Our industry was young. It founded itself in 1957. And so, you know, you're talking only 30 years. No, 20 years, sorry. And when I started my career, so I didn't have an aging population to pull from. So I wasn't intentionally hiring younger people. It's just that it turned out that the average age of my employees was 28. But by the time, you know, 37 years rolls around, you know, our average age was 55, because the people stayed with the company and just got older.
Yep.
But with age comes wisdom. And so, you know, the fact that some of the unicorns have a unofficial policy of not hiring anybody over 45, I think poses a problem for them because, you know, in another 25 years, they're going to have a population over 55 unless they have a forced retirement at 50. And if they do, then of course they can keep the age down. We didn't have that. We didn't force people to leave. And so the average age just matriculated up over time. And that's why we ended up at 55 when I saw average age 55, we sold the company. So, but I think it's a shame that these unicorns, which they, you know, they tend to thrive on the yuppie type of age class to run their companies because they feel that older people are kind of run out of gas, you know, long in the tooth, which is not true.
No, I agree. I actually got some great advice recently, which I've seen come to fruition with some of our hires. Like, you know, there's definitely a time and place to have young people in the way you're hiring. And again, I've talked about our average age here, but there's something to be said about someone that's already been there. You know, if you want to create a Super Bowl team, hire someone that's already been to the Super Bowl and won. You know, if you mm-hmm. want to create an all-star company, well, bring on talent that's already been there at times. Like, that doesn't mean everyone, but it should be a balance. Like, this doesn't, you know, I don't think I would agree that everyone should be over 45 either. It should be a balance. But the idea is, if you can pull in some senior talent that has already been, you know, in the end zone, so to speak, has already done what you want to do and can help you, you know, avoid pitfalls. It's the same reason people, frankly, hire my company or, you know, probably hired Micro back in the day was you can do one of two things. Try to do this yourself and fall into every pitfall everyone else has, or hire a consultancy or a service business that can help you avoid those pitfalls and, you know, can navigate it for you. It's the same thing with hiring senior people. Like, they've already done it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. In professional sports, they call it a young man's game. And I understand. I mean, you know, football players tend to retire before they're 40 because, you know, it's a very strenuous sport. And that's the kind of, you know, age that these guys tend to retire. But that's kind of the name of the game in that sport. And in our business, you know, that's not true. You know, it's not a young man's game, even though some of the unicorns would tell you it's a young man's game because it seems like they believe, whatever, that the older people are just don't have the energy and enthusiasm, the drive, you know, to work 24/7, as they say, and run these kind of businesses. So, you know, it's an atmosphere that they want to develop where they have all these younger people around and it just, and the older people, as they say, the age difference, it just becomes a problem for them. So they tend not to hire people who are over 45.
Well, you know, if there's one thing I've learned is that mentality of having to work day and night all the time is not the most productive thing. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, sometimes it takes hard work. But my business partner, who I would not trade for anything, is generally in here from 9 to 6. Like, that, he comes to work 9 to 6 every day. And he is unbelievably productive. He gets everything done. And then he gets to go home and spend time with his family. And that's his priority. You need both.
That's a good point, Eric, because, you know, in my mind, you know, if you have to work 24/7, or let's say, you know, classic, oh, they even brag about, oh, I had to work 80 hours a week. You know, that's ridiculous. I mean, if you have to work 80 hours a week to run your company successfully, you're just not a successful leader. So in my, yep, in my mind, you know, 50 hours is kind of the max. That if you can't get your work done in 50 hours, for whatever reason, you have to look at your problem. You have an issue that you need to resolve. And I didn't require my people to work over 50 hours a week. And I had a partner very similar to yours. My partner came in at 10 and went home at 10 at night. But that was his, that's what he wanted. Okay. So he worked 12 hours a day. But that was his, I didn't ask him to, that was his lifestyle. He came in at 10 in the morning, went home at 10 in the morning and 10 at night. So, I didn't encourage it. And in fact, you know, I said, you know, Warren, you're setting a bad example because people think you have to work late because you're there late. But he says, well, you know, that's the way I want to work. And so that's okay. It's free agency and we allowed him to do it.
Yeah. And I think that's part of it is like, I think the good thing here is like, cause I work longer hours than most, but that's because there's, you know, there's always other things I can be doing that I'm having fun doing. And I totally agree. If I find myself having to work 60, 70, 80 hours and like not being able to get away from it, I'm doing something wrong. But there's things that like are, I love what I do. I'm young. I don't have a family to go home to yet. I have a fiance, but she's also very accepting of the choice right now to work hard. But that being said, like, I don't expect it of our people. I don't, like, I expect them to show up when they need to. I don't, you know, there are going to be times when they have to work longer hours, but generally like that expectation I think is ridiculous. And it's counterproductive. Like, people need a balance to be a productive employee, or you're asking for just, you know, it's ridiculous. You don't get well-balanced people, which I think is what we're seeing in a lot of software companies in the Valley. They're not creating things anymore for the common person that doesn't want to be super efficient at their desk all the time, which seems to be what everything is after.
Well, you know, you're going to get married here in the next year. And, you know, and I promise you that if you don't set aside time for you and your wife, and your family, yep, you're going to lose them. You're going to lose them in 10 years. You'll be one of the statistics. So, you know, yep, if you want a long lasting marriage, and that's the most important thing in my life is my marriage. I've been married 56 years. I have 22 grandchildren and 6 great grandchildren. And I'm proud of the fact that I did not have to work Saturdays and Sundays. Maybe I worked 10 hours a day, but I didn't have to work weekends. And I was made sure that I was home, in time to at least work with my children, their homework and help them with their various, activities at school. I was involved and engaged and I made sure that they didn't suffer because of my work. You know, if your work becomes your life, then you're going to lose your family.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's actually one of the reasons I put in the time now is so, you know, as the family starts to grow, that's not going to be a sacrifice I have to make. And also something I'm totally respectful with my business partner. I think that's important, which again, goes back to the idea of the older generation not wanting to put in the hours that the younger generation is. First off, I don't think you should be driving the younger generation to do that.
Exactly.
The younger you are, the more, you know, full of life you are, the more you want to take advantage of that age. Like, I'm lucky enough to even, you know, for the past few years, I've had a good balance. I've been able to do some really cool, fun things in my 20s. That I'm glad I did, that weren't just focused around work. Like, you want to set yourself up, but it's always about a balance because you don't want to be that person that hits that midlife crisis and goes, I missed all this because I was working too hard, you know?
And your family too, you know, that they don't want to, you don't want to miss their growing up years either. So do you have any other thoughts or questions you'd like to cover during this podcast?
I'm going to close out with the same question I opened with actually. So when you're talking to entrepreneurs, when you say tough things first, what is the tough thing you most commonly see them avoiding when you feel that is unnecessary? Because I know that all your investments that you make, you have them read your book. And what are you trying to drive that you actually think that, what's a behavior you've seen that you think you're solving there?
Yeah, that's loving the things you hate. So most people procrastinate. They put off doing things that they should do in a timely way, and that's called procrastination, because they don't want to do it. They hate it. And so learning to love the things you hate, it's a real art. It's a goal. I mean, it's something that you should strive for. Is to anything that any of the listeners that think there's something that they don't want to do, they ought to go out and do it now. Do it right now. And what you're going to find is like Emerson says, that which we persist in doing becomes easier. Not that the nature of the task becomes easier, but our ability to perform it becomes better.
Yeah.
And so it stick with a task until it sticks with you. So that's what I've seen, is that people tend to ignore, leaders and entrepreneurs tend to ignore doing the tough things. They tend to put them off or delegate them to someone else. But any leader or entrepreneur that can learn to do the things they don't like doing and doing well, that's the ones that are going to succeed.
Couldn't agree more. Well, Ray, thank you so much for allowing me to guest host your podcast. And I definitely hope to do this again soon.
Well, again, I thank you, Eric, for joining me today. I admire you for starting your very successful company. You've done well. I think you're up to 100 plus people now. And that's really remarkable, given, you know, you've only started about 3 or 4 years your company is, and you've done well. And I applaud you for what you've accomplished. So again, if you're interested in seeing what Eric's done, is doing, look him up on hawkmedia.com. It's hawkmedia.com. And again, I want to refer the listeners back to Tough Things First. We are our website, toughthingsfirst.com. Or pick up my book from Amazon under the same name, and try to read it and put it in practice, and you'll become successful. So again, thanks again, Eric, for joining us today, and look forward to talking to you again.
Absolutely. Thank you as well.
You've been listening to Tough Things First, candid talk with Silicon Valley's longest serving CEO, Ray Zinn. Drop by the contact page at toughthingsfirst.com for more about the book, more podcasts, and links to Ray's Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn pages to keep up with Ray Zinn's wisdom daily.